Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
All right, this one comes in on the RommelSlot.com text line, 303-713-1043 from Sid, who asks, Mark, is this just a big tease, the idea that Seattle might be looking to trade Russell Wilson? Signed, Sid, the get anything it takes, or give anything it takes to get a quarterback Bronco fan. Wow, that's a...
Yeah.
He went overboard on about that, but...
Right.
You can tell, I mean, he wants a quarterback here.
And right.
So, if Russell Wilson's out there, do you do it?
If Russell Wilson was out there, would you have an attempt to get a Russell... Certainly, absolutely. I mean, you'd be foolish not to. Now... Is he necessarily John Elway's pocket guy? Probably not. But I do believe that this is the kind of thing that people talk about that ends up never happening, right? It's the old, I mean, there were a lot of talk back in the day about moving John Elway because Dan Reeves drafted Tommy Maddox. You remember that? So there was a lot of that went on as well. I can't see Russell Wilson being traded away from Seattle. I mean, I just cannot see that happening. There are too many other things, and it is too hard. Because you caught lightning in a bottle, do not get cocky or arrogant and think you can catch it in a bottle again. I mean, Russell Wilson is one of the elite quarterbacks in this league, and to give that guy away because, what, you don't want to pay him, or you think that you've got a great running game, like... I can't tell you how much Russell Wilson, even though he rarely ran the ball last year, I think he had his lowest run totals of his career last year. I can't tell you, watching film and having done a couple Seattle games, the effect Russell Wilson has on the backside of a defense, even though he never runs the ball. Mike, there's no constriction. The cutback lanes are huge because the backside linebacker, the backside defensive end, even the backside safety, are all hanging backside just in case Russell Wilson takes off. And he only, like, once every four games he takes off and gets a 12-yard run, and still everybody's flat-footed. It's like they're wearing cement shoes because they're so worried about the potential of Russell Wilson threatening the edge of their defense that the cutback lanes are gigantic for their running back. So don't be confused. Don't think we've got the run game figured out and we don't need Russell Wilson. Because if you think that way in Seattle, you're foolish.
On the subject of this upcoming draft, to me, it's more of a game. I mean, my man D-Mac, it's life and death to him. He is so determined to try to make his point. But as he goes around and around, he keeps boxing himself in and making himself look bad when it comes to his drafting philosophy. So have you heard the promo that's been running?
Yeah.
Do we have that? Can you guys run that? Ben, run that for me, will you please?
Mike Evans has the khaki pants strategy. You draft a quarterback in the mid rounds. D-Mac, not so much.
If the Broncos did draft a quarterback at 10, I would be okay with it. However, if you stupidly take a quarterback in rounds 2, 3, or 4, I will be beside myself.
Maybe we should call D-Mac's idea the hot yoga pants strategy? Wait, D-Mac, hot yoga pants?
Ew. If you go khaki pants Mike Evans land, then we're going to have issues.
There's never an off-season.
Right. Help me with this. Let me. I got to talk this out loud.
Okay.
Try to make some sense of this, okay?
All right.
So last year, you had to take a quarterback, fill in the blank, draft one of five, doesn't matter who, draft one of five at five, because you had to have a quarterback, and this quarterback class was the class you had to get a quarterback
right.
in.
Hall of Fame, it's
going to be a Hall of Fame class.
Right.
It's going to be reminiscent of 1983.
Mm.
Then, as the season played along, he said the mistake in passing on a quarterback this past year is even more magnified because next year's class is no good.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So now we've arrived to the point where this class of quarterbacks, which in his mind was no good, you take one.
Is worthy of a 10th overall pick.
By the way, he didn't say who. Just one.
Just any
of them.
Right.
What is wrong with my man here? I mean, he is literally got himself all lathered up to the point where literally it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It can be any quarterback. As long as you take him at 10 or in the first round, you're fine.
Right.
Come on.
Give me quarterback,
I mean,
any quarterback. It reminds me of a skit.
Even if they're crap.
Right, it reminds me of a skit they did on Monty Python. Bring out your dead. Bring out your dead. They have a wheelbarrow full of dead people, yep. You know, and they throw the one guy on there. And he goes, oh. He goes, well, oh, he's not dead yet. He's nearly dead. He'll be dead any minute, right? Just bring out your quarterback.
Yes.
Bring out your quarterback. Any quarterback will do. Here's, okay.
I mean, it was in his words, it was it's a crap class, and it's not worth taking a quarterback, and it only further illustrates how much a mistake it was not taking a quarterback last year, but he's moved on from that to the point where it's like, we'll get one this year.
Right. Anyone. Just get a quarterback. By the way, it was also me who said that I believe that Bradley Chubb will have over 10 sacks, and he bristled off. 6.5, maybe 7, like, you know, come on, stop it. Here's the deal. And this, I had this epiphany. This was yesterday as I was watching, a draft show on ESPN with my man Mel Kiper and Todd McShay and my man Lewis Riddick. And so when the Giants made their trades, right? When they traded away a bunch of players, you know, they traded away Odell Beckham Jr. They ended up getting Cleveland's 17th overall pick. So they have the 6th and the 17th pick. And here's what it made me realize. Okay? First time you've heard this on the radio. This is what I think is going to happen. I think the Broncos are going total khaki pants, and I think the player is going to be the Giants. So I think they take a real live football player at 6, whoever that may be. You know, and there's some great ones. You know, there's some really good players. But they're going to take a real live difference maker, maybe on the defensive side of the ball, at 6. That's the direction they're going. Okay? And then I believe at 17 they're going to trade up with your Denver Broncos to 10 to usurp the picks of Cincinnati at 11, at Washington at 15, Miami at 13. And then there will be a pick of the litter at quarterback. Because think about it. After Kyler Murray goes, the only other team that really is desperately in need of a quarterback is the Giants. But at 6, if you're like, we're going to sit this guy behind Eli for a couple of years anyhow. Let's get ourselves a difference maker. Prop up Eli. Make sure we're playing great defense and great, you know, and great running the ball and all that kind of stuff. And then let's go get ourselves the quarterback to groom at 10, whether that's Drew Locke, Daniel Jones, or Haskins. At that point, it really doesn't matter. I mean, think about it. 9, Buffalo has their guy, right? At 8, is it Detroit? They have their guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at 7, is it Jacksonville at 7? I'm just off the top of my head.
Yep.
Jacksonville at 7, they have their guy. They got their guy in Nick Foles. You know, there's been some speculation about the Raiders, but the Raiders were enamored with Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray's going to be gone, so the Raiders are going to take a real-life football player. You know, Tampa Bay has Jameis Winston at 5. Like, this is my prediction. The Giants and the Broncos are going to do a deal. And the Broncos are going to go down to 17 from 10, and they're going to amass themselves the 17th overall pick, and they're going to get themselves another high second rounder out of that deal.
I'd love that. I mean, I want Devin White, but if Devin White's not going to be available,
he's not going to be available.
Well, then trade back. By the way, I can't wait for later today. When my man D-Mac is talking about the idea of Russell Wilson being available and how the Broncos should move heaven and earth to get him, Russell Wilson was drafted in the 3rd round. He's a khaki pants quarterback. Just saying. Okay.
Doesn't count.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Doesn't count. Doesn't count. Because there'll be some kind of, he's really really is kind of the Einstein of talk radio. He'll have some type of formula that, like, there's nobody on the planet that he could actually figure it out. Like, Einstein knew, you see this picture of the black hole the other day?
Yes!
And Einstein, before anybody could take a picture of a black hole, kind of simulated what a black hole would look like whatever it was, 80 years ago or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and it looked almost identical.
I looked closely at that black hole, and for just a second, you know, like sometimes you look at like impressionist art, you know, and you're supposed to like, if you look closely enough at it, mm-hmm. you'll see this, right? I looked closely enough at that picture of that black hole.
Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn I saw Carmelo Anthony in the low post.
That was actually, I wasn't, I didn't expect that. That was comedy. That was actually comedy.
Mm-hmm. Another little bonus question.
Maybe Mark. You could have seen the Rockies hitters at the dish.
Oh, good one.
Okay.
Good one.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as yours.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Keep trying there, big fella. Another bonus question, Mark. Mark, where does Tiger winning the Masters rank among the all-time great sports stories? Okay. I saw somebody on Twitter who I respect, Lodo, who said watching Tiger win with his children was thrilling as they got to have their Miracle on Ice moment. Are we putting Tiger winning the Masters up there among the all-time great sports stories with the Miracle on Ice?
I tell you, I don't know about the Miracle on Ice, but I will tell you from just a retribution comeback story, especially with the injury issues at 43 years old, and now all of a sudden it's can you get Jack at 18? I mean, it was literally one of the coolest things that I've gotten to watch. I mean, you know, my wife and I are sitting on the couch watching this thing unfold. Actually, she's kind of putzing around the kitchen, which was driving me crazy. Would you just sit down and quit doing stuff, right? But anyhow, we kind of watched it together. Then my daughter FaceTimes me. She goes, are you watching? Of course I'm watching this, you know. It was really cool. And I was so inspired by that story, Mike. You know what? A lot of people went out and probably... You went to the driving range.
I'm going to the driving range today.
Right. You know what?
That's how inspired I was.
I was so inspired that I went out and did about two and a half, three hours of yard work. Because Augusta is gorgeous. Is it not gorgeous?
So everybody else was like inspired to go play golf. You were like, man, look at those rhododendrons.
Yes.
I got to get me some of those.
So I went out, because I'm top dressing today, I went out and dropped my mower blades. And just kind of mulched in some of my grass is really thin. So as I get in that seed, soil, sand mixture, I can get it in there, you know, as they cover and just get that seed is just going to be soaking in that rich dirt. Oh, gosh. It's going to be awesome.
Ooh.
Just me. It's going to get a little warm in here.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be awesome. Today, when you watch me doing my yard work, it's going to be like an episode of Game of Thrones. Right? I mean, there's going to be things that are going on there. There'll be like, exactly. I'm elected! You stand no chance! Right? Use my shovel like a sword.
A sword?
Yeah, sword.
What's a sword?
A sword.
What's a sword?
That's how you said it.
It's a sword.
Sword.
May the sword be with you.
Sword. Dost thou not my sword scare you?
Did you just say sword?
See, your sword is as big as mine. Now let's see how well you end it.
It was great stuff. And I mean, when you got grown men admitting that they were crying
right
when they were watching it. And, you know, I'll admit, it got a little emotional when he was hugging his kids. I thought that was a really cool,
right,
cool moment. It is up there. But does it rank among, I mean, are we talking about,
you know, are we talking about the greatest Muhammad Ali moments? Are we talking about the greatest Jordan moments? Are we talking about, I mean, are we talking about this up there on the Mount Rushmore of all-time great sports moments?
It truly was one of the great moments, Mike. You know, I don't know where it ranks. I don't have all the great moments in sports in front of me. But one of the cool things for me was you talked about him hugging his kids and all that stuff. In the kind of post-match press conference, he talked about his daughter, who had just lost a state soccer game the day before. And it just takes it back to kind of real life. Like, we all deal with stuff, right? He's at the Masters on Saturday, talks to his daughter, who he couldn't be there for her game. She just lost the state finals or state, you know, some type of state soccer thing. He goes, hey, you want to fly up to the Masters and watch Sunday? Oh, sure, Dan. You know, and, you know, he's got his private jet and stuff, which good for him. But I just thought it was kind of a cool, like sometimes we tend to not look at guys who have achieved or celebrity figures or sports figures as being human. Like, the human element of this story to me is what makes it the most compelling, is that, you know, you made a ton of mistakes, you self-inflicted wounds, and then you had all the injury issues, and it looked like you were just basically saving your back with surgery so that you could live a half normal life, and to be able to come back to the pinnacle of professional golf and win the Masters.
See, I completely disagree with the discussion yesterday that this was a redemption story, and that this is proof that we as Americans love the idea of building somebody up, knocking them down, and then seeing them come back up again. This was not some sort of major comeback for Tiger where he had to win the public back. Tiger never stopped being popular, okay? Mm-hmm. Tiger went away because he was hurt. But
right.
People, even when Tiger was away from the game, as he was going through the infidelity and the scandal and the corruption and the addictions, all that stuff, he never lost his popularity.
Mm-hmm.
It was always, my God, this sport misses Tiger. I mean, we golf fans are trying to talk themselves into the idea that golf will be okay without Tiger. You know, look at the new crop of stars that are coming up. And anytime one of those new stars won a tournament, it was like, see, look, the game's on solid ground without Tiger. But it was always the idea that Tiger was being missed and that we were trying to fill this void left by Tiger. It was never that Tiger was on the outs with his fandom. Tiger was always popular. And all it took was him to show one glimpse of being back and showing that there was still something there for people to get all excited about and to glom onto. So I totally disagree with the idea that this was somehow some big comeback from a guy who was down in the gutter. That's not true at all. What it was a guy who was hurt. And we thought his career was done. Heck, Nick Faldo is relaying the story yesterday that 2 years ago at the Champions Dinner that Tiger told him he was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was having this surgery, that cage surgery with his back, just so he could be normal. Not that he'd come back and play golf again. Certainly not that he'd come back and win the Masters. So I think people were drawn. People's emotions came from two things. It came from they were impressed by where this guy was physically and how he was able to come back. And they just missed him. They just missed this guy. They missed the remarkable charisma that this guy has had from the moment he showed up. And that's what people missed. And the fact that it was back and he was doing stuff that he hadn't done in over a decade, that's what made people emotional.
How much do you think it is, though, that he came back from all the stuff that he's come back from? Like I said, some self-inflicted, the injuries notwithstanding. But you know, for you listen to anybody talk about how he's changed, the changes he's made, the fact that he is social, the fact that he seems to be enjoying
the fans. He's interacting with fans. He's smiling. He's tipping his cap to people. Uh-huh. You know, he just seems to be such a different guy. Like he's come out the other side of a real dark time in his life, both with injuries and you know, and the other decisions that he's made in his life. We all know what those are. And that he's come back on the other side of those things. And he's, in fact, it seems as though through his actions, that he's become a different person.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the lore of what's going on. I will tell you this, though. Look at the ratings on Saturday. I don't think they've come out for Sunday yet, but I guarantee you they're off the chart
because oh, yeah.
Saturday's ratings were the best ratings in years of the Masters. And
this guy's always been the Pied Piper.
He moves the needle, man.
Oh, does he ever? But he always moved the meter with an almost cyborg-type mentality that people were drawn to.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think people looked at this, there's a more human Tiger, and look at the emotion, and look at him interacting with his kids, and look at the way that his fellow pros were reacting to him afterwards. I mean, these are all guys who picked up the sticks for the first time anyway because of Tiger.
Right.
And now they're out there playing with him, they're competing with him, they're seeing him do his thing. You know, Koepka, Molinari, they're hitting balls into the drink, and it's, you know, they always said, hey, we would love to be able to be out there with Tiger in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Because you had your chance and you put it in Ray's Creek. So, I just think the whole human redemption story, I think that was overplayed. I don't think Tiger ever really lost his appeal. To the point where people had turned on him.
I agree with that. There were a handful of people. There were a lot of people that were disgusted by his actions.
Oh, yeah.
And rightfully so.
But
I get it.
It didn't.
Have you ever heard somebody call it a crick?
Ray's Crick?
And just a crick instead of a creek. Like, where does that come from? I think there's people that call it a crick.
Crick. No, you're right.
Who cares? Is that like pop and soda? Is there a certain area of the country where it's a crick instead of a creek?
I think you just say creek fast. It becomes crick.
I don't think. I think it's just a crick. People are just like,
what are we doing?
I'm just telling you. I hear people that say crick instead of creek.
Think that's like a southern thing or Midwest thing?
Yeah.
You know, you probably just say a little slower. So creek. You don't
go
say
down
creek,
to the crick.
It just becomes crick.
Right. You go down to the creek. You know what? If you're going down to the creek, you're probably going to catch crawfish.
Yeah, it's just chill. Why do we have to over-enunciate creek?
Yeah, Stokely probably goes, let's go down to the creek
right.
Catch some crawfish. Peyton, are we going down to the creek to catch crawfish together?
I'm a raging Cajun right
now. I'll hold your pole.
My best friend takes Manny.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let that linger. To linger.
Mark went 15 rounds this weekend with Avs fans. Why?
And did he come out bloodied? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, I'm looking at you. You seem okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You look normal.
Yeah.
Look like your same yoked self. I was thinking I might walk in today and see somebody that was, I don't know.
Oh, just kind of curled up in the corner a little bit?
Curled up, I don't know, just somehow smaller.
Right.
After the just haymakers that you exchanged all weekend long with very, very angry Avalanche fan. Care to share what that was all about?
Oh, my good. You know, you and I made a video where I was, you know, making fun of you for, well, first off, I called the 4-0 loss to the Calgary Flames,
mm-hmm.
as our friend Barry Melrose calls them. I called it
a debacle.
Debacle.
And I said, hey, wait a minute.
So the first half of that game, they carried the play, and if not for going 0 for 3 on three power play chances, it could have been a much different game. And, Calgary won the second half of the game, but that there was a lot to build on.
Right. So,
and you got on me about...
Right. You made excuses like Avalanche fan made, like, well, they would have won if Mike Smith not stood on his head. And, you know, and I'm like, stop it. Come on. I mean, execute the power play, defend the power play, you know? I mean, kill the power play. And... you didn't get that done, and you lost. You mean you got shut out? Yeah, debacle. That's, you know, that's a football mentality. I get it, but hey, 4-0 is 4-0, you know? And of course, you know, you want to make excuses and take a moral victory because you outskated them for, you know, a period and a half or whatever. Yeah. Which led to us making this video of me handing you a certificate of participation on behalf of all Avalanche fans.
Right.
So anyhow, apparently that went pretty, It was pretty tame until yesterday, because of course I'm sure some Avalanche fanboy, you know, blogosphere guy found it and was had no context, but completely offended by that video and shared it with, you know, his little merry, you know, band of brothers. And, next thing I know, I'm being assaulted by a bunch of 12-year-olds on Twitter. You know, over Avalanche, guy. And so anyhow, I ended up.
They were upset.
Oh my gosh. You know, exchanging a few barbs, if you will, with a bunch of 12-year-olds until they quit. They quit at about 7:15 because it was bath time, you know. You gotta get their nethers scrubbed up in the bath.
When you finally said, you finally, I think, had it, and you finally dropped the old, you know, look, it's a school night. Isn't it time for you to go to bed? That's what I was like, uh-oh, Mark's had enough.
Yeah.
He's pulling out the heavy artillery right now.
Go to bed, Abby.
So, now look, what we did was a bit, well, was tongue-in-cheek, but you do agree, wouldn't you? I hope you would agree that that they were able to build on what happened in game one.
Sure.
Now, you're right, there's no such thing as moral victories. But, would you at least concede my point that I made after game one, is that a 7-game series, it takes on its own...
It's got its own life force to it.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Its own life force. It ebbs, it flows.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wave. It's one wave of emotion here, and then it's another one over here. And so much of it is not only just X's and O's adjustments; it's attitude and mental and emotional adjustments that go on during the course of. That's why I love 7-game series, because you watch a 7-game series go the distance, and you think back at how it was at the beginning of that series to the end of that series, mm-hmm. and you realize all the stuff that has happened. It's remarkable, and it's great theater. So my point was like, all right, they lost, but there was a lot that they were able to take from that and apply, and didn't they go out and do that?
Yeah, they did.
All right, then I was right, and you were wrong. That you were too harsh on me. No. Now I'm kind of siding with Avalanche fanboy that you were a little bit too hard on me.
You gonna be all right?
Oh, I'm fine,
little fella.
Oh, I'm fine.
You know.
But I just want you to admit that you may have been wrong.
You know that I'm going to take a football mentality to everything. You know, that's the way I do things. I mean, I take this kind of every game is important. And in a 7-game series, I get, you know, you got to win 4. So I get that you've got time to do that. But the bottom line is don't give me the goalie stood on his head and that's why we lost. I don't like... Like, I don't like the excuse aspect of it. Like,
and you didn't hear me saying that after game one.
No,
I find that ridiculous to say that a goaltender
stood on his head.
Stood his head. No, this was
no. You know,
this was on them.
Right. You had other excuses.
no reasons.
Okay,
I was wrong.
Excuses.
It's not excuses. I put it on the Avs. I said, look, they didn't play with enough grit. They didn't play with enough force. They were too passive. They were trying to be too fine.
Mm-hmm.
I said these were all the reasons why they lost, not because the goaltender stood on his head, and because the Avalanche violated Barry Melrose's number one rule of winning in playoff hockey. That is, you got to be very good on special teams. They were 0-3 in the first part of this game where they could have
0-4 total
grabbed control of the game.
Right, and Calgary was 2-5 or Calgary was 2-5 and
I put it on the Avs. I didn't give them an
excuse. Good. I'm glad.
But I said the beauty of what they did is that there's no reason why they can't learn from what they did and apply it to game two, and they did. I mean, you want to talk about a team that stuck with it all game long, even when they weren't getting the results on the scoreboard, they never stopped taking the play to Calgary, and it finally paid off when they scored late, Calgary, late in the third period, and then in overtime they get the win. So now the question is, and now again, the beauty of a seven-game series is here's what they're saying in Calgary. We didn't match their intensity.
Mm-hmm.
They were the hungrier team. And now we've got to go out on the road, and we've got to play like underdogs.
Sure.
And we have to play with more grit and more jam, and our top guys have to deliver. Johnny Gaudreau has to deliver like Nathan MacKinnon delivered.
Right.
I mean, that, and then let's see how that plays out. Let's see how the Avalanche let up at all? Do they feel like, hey, we got the split on the road, we come home, now we have home ice. We got Cale Makar, the Hobie Baker Award-winning defenseman from UMass. It's the equivalent of winning the Heisman Trophy. By the way, what do you think of that rule, by the way? So in hockey, you draft a guy, you hold his rights, but he can continue to play college.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as his college career is over, literally minutes later, he can sign, become a pro, and join you just in time for a playoff game. That's what's going to happen tonight. That would be the equivalent of, that would be like a football team, not that it would happen, yeah, I mean, it would be the equivalent of a football team holding the rights to a quarterback who wins the Heisman Trophy and then literally joins your team and is your starting quarterback that next week.
It just goes to show you the difference between whether you could do that in baseball, you could do it in basketball, you could do it in hockey. You could never do that in football. Come and learn an offense. Right? Come and learn what we do here on maybe on the defensive side of the ball. If you were just a outstanding cover corner, say, hey, just lock up the X receiver. You're going to follow him. You're playing cat coverage. You got that cat. The rest of us are going to take care of the rest of this stuff. It is a pretty amazing rule when you think about it. But, you couldn't do it offensively anyhow. You couldn't do it in football. But it is a pretty amazing, kind of an amazing rule that you have. Now, what about your playoff? Do they have a playoff roster? I mean, forgive my ignorance. This is going to be another reason for, a bunch of 12-year-olds to attack me.
No, you can just
throw him on your roster.
Adjust the roster, and he joins your team. He's on the roster. The other guy's a healthy scratch. He will play tonight. Right. He's going to be out there. He's going to play tonight. Just a couple of days ago, he was in the Frozen Four.
Yeah. You know what the key is, though? You understand what the key is here. This whole, all this talk about Avalanche and Calgary and all that. You know what the key is? Avalanche have to contain Tkachuk. If you do not contain Tkachuk, you got no chance.
So, true story. I'm driving out to Aspen on Friday for the fan ski escape at Snowmass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
That song came on.
Oh, Shaq Khan did?
Shaq Khan came on.
Tkachuk.
I just started Tkachuk. Howling.
Tkachuk.
I'm in the car everybody. Just Tkachuk. By myself. Just
Tkachuk. It's all I want to do. Tkachuk. Yeah.
Bow, bow. What? Do, 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 do.
Yeah, it's a great song.
All right, coming up, the...
I want to hold you in my arms, Tucker, feel you with my charms, Tucker.
I got nothing.
Go ahead.
Just I got nothing. Just I got strong. No. Just I want. Okay. At the risk, we're gonna go from running the risk of ticking off Avs fanboy to ticking off Nuggets fanboy. That's next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Mark. So we got a debate here. This is a legitimate
debate that is raging out there among the Nuggets fandom after what happened Saturday night. So, one school of thought is, wow, why was Nikola Jokic so passive? Why did he only attempt 9 shots? Why did he only go to the free throw line once and attempt 2 free throws? How can you think that you're going to win this series with Jokic playing such a passive role? The other side says, hey, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. This guy's one of the greatest passing big men of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He had 14 assists. He did his job. It was the other guy's fault for not knocking down shots. And Jokic played exactly the way he's supposed to play. Clearly, there are two different, I mean, there is a line drawn in the sand, and you are on one side or the other. What side are you on?
I'm on the, you've got to do more. You've got to find a way to get yourself to the free throw line more than one time. You got to find a way to be a little bit selfish. The greatest scorers, the greatest players of all time, even when their team or they weren't knocking down shots, found a way to affect the outcome of the game through scoring. 9 shots. You made 4 of them. Yeah, you had a triple-double. Yeah, you had, what, 14 rebounds and 14 assists. That's awesome. Guess what? You lost. And you only scored 96. As a facilitator, it's great to facilitate when everybody's knocking down shots. That's awesome. That's probably pretty easy, right? Get excited about the assists, guys knocking down shots. Like, it'd be easy to play for Golden State and to be a post player when you swing it out to Seth Curry and somebody, and the defense is, has, you know, is slacked off to basically control the inside portion of the game, and you sling it out to him in the corner, and he's just knocking down threes, and it's beautiful, right? It's easy to get that. That's like simple. When things aren't going that way, when your team isn't knocking down shots, when Murray takes, what, 24 shots and knocks down, what, 9 of them or something like that? You know, when Barton isn't knocking down shots, you know what you have to do? That's the time when unselfishness will hurt you. We've heard it. We've heard the one of the biggest criticisms of LeBron James, who's, you know, renowned as the best basketball player on the planet. One of the big criticisms that, you know, that the people who hate LeBron James have is he defers too often. In crunch situations, he defers. He gives up the ball. And then his ardent supporters are like, well, he's making the right play. You know, I just know that when push came to shove, you know, a guy like Michael Jordan shoved D'Lo out of the way and knocked down a shot. He didn't facilitate somebody else. He didn't facilitate Pippen to knock it down.
Uh-huh.
Right? He didn't throw it inside to Luke, to Longley.
Kobe would give you a death stare if you didn't give him the ball in that kind of situation. And even bagging on LeBron. Right. I mean, LeBron has found himself in so many of those clutch, you know, alpha male type situations where he has taken over. It's just that those times that he did stood out, and it led to a lot of debate. But make no mistake, this guy has been as selfish as they come over the course of his career. And that's my point, is that if you're going to be an NBA superstar, you have to have selfishness in your DNA. You have to be a selfish player. Not all the time, but there are moments where you've got to be so selfish that the mindset is, if we're going down, we're going down with me taking the shots, with me taking the responsibility. And what I didn't like the other day was I didn't see any of that alpha male mentality. I'm not just going to pass it off as like, well, that's what a lot of people find annoying about the Jokic supporters, is that when he has a big game, they scream from the mountaintop, superstar, superstar. But if he doesn't have one of those games, the excuses are, well, he's just trying to facilitate the offense. He's trying to get other people involved. And that's the way the Nuggets play. You can't have it both ways, folks.
Here's the thing. The one thing that bothered me, Mike, is at the end of that game, there was probably inside a minute left to play. He gets the ball, and I get that he was being double-teamed, but he gets the ball at the rim. I mean, literally at the rim. And it's one thing that, like, you know, Nene used to drive me nuts at 6'11",
and he'd get the ball inside and he'd finger roll it, you know, and I'm like, would you flush the damn ball? Like, stud up, flush it, right? And I know that he was a really good player and all that stuff, but it drove me nuts.
He'd only do that if Tim Duncan was standing his way.
Right.
That was the most, one of the most inexplicable things. The guy was his most passive guy you ever seen until Tim Duncan was in his face, and then all of a sudden he became
angry.
Uncaged lion.
Right.
Jeez.
But I'm like, you get the ball at the rim, go up and flush it. Either you make it, you get to the foul line, you get a shoot two, or maybe you make it and you get to the foul line for an and one. But instead, you try to facilitate inside with all those bodies, you turn the ball over and it's going the other way. And you can sit there and tell me, well, it's the right play. You know, he was double teamed. Like, there comes a time when the right play is you. When the right play is Bird. When the right play is Magic. When the right play is Jordan. When the right play is Kobe. When the right play is Jimmy Chitwood.
That's a good pull. I like that. So what you're saying is that in game two, if there's one of these situations again late in the game, right? And Michael Malone's in there and he's, you know, feverishly drawing up the game plan for the last play. And he's like, okay, here's what I want to do. All right. Joker, you're going to come up here. You're going to get the inbounds pass. They're all going to anticipate you taking the shot. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to pass the ball
up.
Kick it out and let some, and we're going to let Will or Jamal take the game winning shot. And then the whole bench kind of sits back. And then Malone's like, what's the matter? What's the matter with you guys? And then Nikola just steps up and goes, I will make it.
Right. Here you go. But coach, this is, I will make the shot. But coach, I make the shot.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he does.
Right.
We need our Hoosiers moment.
That's right.
We need our Jimmy.
It's kind of a cross between the Hoosiers.
Nikola Jokic is our Jimmy Chitwood.
Right. It'd be a cross between the Hoosiers and the Terminator.
Right.
But coach, I'd make shot.
I want Jokic to be our Jimmy Chitwood.
Right.
Jamal Murray can be the guy that
is the Huff.
Is it just me? Or is that one of like the big plot holes in the entire Hoosiers movie? Is the guy that gets tossed off the team early on?
Uh-huh.
At the end of the season, he's back on the team, and there's never really any explanation of how he got back on the team. Is it just me? I'm just tossing that out. Yeah. I've seen the movie about 60 times, and
you've seen it more than I.
That part always kind of just. It doesn't ruin the movie for me at all, but it always just kind of like. How did he get back on the team?
Right. Chew on that. Remember the guy who said, what kind of gum is he chewing?
And then comes back. Yeah. That's the guy who got tossed off the team early on.
All right. So let me ask you a quick question. Can you imagine, like, I think that the Huff could use the Russian billionaire voice to do the Joker. So let's go through the scene again.
All right.
You said
the Huff. All right. Huff, so it's the last play of the game.
Right.
Michael Malone's in the huddle.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawing up the play. He's like, all right, here's what we're going to do, guys. We're going to use Nikola as a decoy. They're going to think he's going to get the ball. Instead, we're going to let somebody else take the game-winning shot.
The Huff. Enter the Huff. Go.
Hello. You will give me the ball, and I will win the game. This is what I do.
I'm just kidding. Don't give me the ball. Give it to him. He'll try to win it.
No, you will give me the ball. I confuse you.
I'm just kidding! We don't know what we're doing. Perfect. Where's my goal?
Yeah, that's perfect.
That's good. There you go. And on that, we're done. Pritch and Cecil coming your way next.